This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and Happy New Year. Glad to have you with us on our first live broadcast for 2017. Great to be back behind the microphone here in Washington, D.C. A lot going on here in our nation's capital as Congress is back. Yes, they're back. And getting right down to business. Now, what can we expect from the 115th session of Congress? Well, we're going to find out. Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows, is here in just a moment with details. Also, Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe will join me with the latest on the political fallout from John Kerry's rant on Israel. And we'll talk confirmation politics with him as well. And speaking of confirmation, there will be over 1,200 people appointed by President-elect Donald Trump that will require Senate confirmation. What does that process entail? Well, Tevi Troy, former Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, is here to provide some insight. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, check it out. All right, folks, the 115th Congress is now in session. Vice President Joe Biden has sworn in the new and returning members of the Senate, and the House voted to give Paul Ryan another term as Speaker of the House. Well, what can we expect from a Republican-controlled Congress now with a, well, soon-to-be Republican administration? Changes in the capital city? Well, let's talk about it. We're going to talk to the chairman, new chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, our good friend Congressman Mark Meadows of the 11th District of North Carolina. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you. And actually, I stepped off the House floor to actually chat with you a little bit. But what we need to see is a real difference in Washington, D.C. And I know conservatives are committed to making sure that it's not just all talk, but it's really action that follows up. And so I'm looking forward to this 115th Congress.
So what's your sense, as you've now talked to some of your colleagues? I mean, you guys came back in last night. You've been working today. Is there a sense of anticipation that we're going to see some significant changes?
Well, I think there is a sense. There's a real excitement that we're actually going to get some things done. I know on Obamacare repeal and replacement, I've got two meetings tomorrow, meeting with some senators later in the week to really come up with a strategy. My big concern, though, Tony, and where your listeners really need to weigh in, is it's not enough to talk about it. We need to make sure that the first 100 days in the, of this new administration are the most productive. And that means that we actually have to take actions that may have political consequences, that may not be the popular thing to do, but whether it's repealing Obamacare, whether it's getting rid of regulations, whether it's defunding Planned Parenthood, we've got to take those tough votes, and I can say the Freedom Caucus stands ready to do exactly that, push.
Well, and this is one thing that is different in the transitions that I've seen in the past. Now, with longevity comes a frame of reference that's a little broader. I've been here now almost 14 years. I've seen the Republicans have control of Congress. I've seen them lose it. I've seen them regain it. But in this situation where you actually have a Republican president, a Republican-controlled, well, Republican majority in the Senate, I shouldn't say control. They don't have the 60 votes to totally control it. But you have,
right,
clearly you have Republican control of the House. And we've seen in the past where the Republicans have been more fearful about preserving their majority than using their majority to advance the things that they campaigned on. The one difference that I see, not only do you have Donald Trump, who is a little different than normal politicians, but you have the Freedom Caucus. What role will the Freedom Caucus play in this 115th Congress?
Well, we're going to push it. We're already starting to see it. I know I've been in contact with our leadership to say we've got to not only hit the ground running, but we've got to pass things in such a way that the American people start to have that hope back. There's a deficit of trust in Washington, D.C., and that's well played. We haven't accomplished much of anything, not just in a divided government, but even when we've had control. Your point was well taken. And what my big concern is that everybody says, well, let's wait. We'll pick a better time, or we need another 12 months to figure this out. And if we can't get it done in the first 200 days, we're going to make sure that the voice of the American people, the millions of Americans that feel disenfranchised, get to see real action in this first 200 days. The Freedom Caucus will be at the tip of the spear to make sure that happens.
I mean, for all practical purposes, anything of significance that's going to happen in this administration is going to happen between now and August of 2017. This August. I mean, so you basically have 6 months to get it done.
Well said. And you're exactly right. If it doesn't happen between now and August, the chances of it happening after that, because everybody's going to start to say, well, let's wait until the Senate, they're new, we got people up for reelection, and then they're going to say, well, let's wait for the next presidential. It's got to happen between now and August, which means that we don't need to be going on vacation or taking recess. We need to be about the people's business. I can tell you that even if we just implement some of the rollback of the rules that we've seen passed in the last 60 days under this Obama administration, we're going to put people back to work, and we're going to have some of those things that are near and dear to both you and I addressed, whether it's defunding Planned Parenthood, which I know that you've been very active on. And we're going to need the support of your listeners to call in and put pressure on some of the weak-kneed members of Congress and those senators that may not want to take the vote. But we're going to be forcing that vote where they at least have to say yes or no and be held accountable to the American people.
Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, new chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, joins me. He stepped off the House floor. Mark, I know you're busy, but I want to ask you at least one more question. As you talked about the Freedom Caucus, it's kind of the driving conservative force of the House. What are the top three priorities of the Freedom Caucus in this 115th Congress?
Well, they're really, I'm going to give you four instead of three. So I'll give you more than you asked for, and that's what we need to see out of Washington, D.C. But one of those is obviously repeal Obamacare. That's at the top of our list. The next is defund Planned Parenthood. The next is putting a halt to Syrian refugees until we have a better vetting system. And the fourth is really get an actionable plan to secure our borders to make sure that we have indeed a defensible southern border. Those four things are going to have a lot of our attention and the regulations that go along with that.
All right. Mark, thank you for stepping off the House floor. I know you're busy. Thanks for joining us on our first day back here in 2017.
Well, it's always a pleasure. God bless you and God bless America, Tony. Thank you.
All right. North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows, new chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. That is the conservative conscience of the House. You got the Republican Steering Committee. They're conservative, largest caucus in the House. But the Freedom Caucus, they're even a little more conservative, and they're willing to fight for those things. In fact, as we talked about, I think last time we had Mark on before the Christmas break, that entity was birthed in my conference room over dinner one night. These guys, and it's a growing number, guys and gals that stand steadfast for constitutional conservatism and willing to fight for those things, even when it means fighting their own party. And again, I give you a frame of reference here, as I've been now almost 14 years watching this process from my vantage point, being involved in it here at the Family Research Council. The Republicans have in the past been more concerned about preserving their majority than using that majority to advance the things that brought them to office. You will be critical in the accountability portion of this. Two things, really, that you and I need to be doing in the next 6 months in particular, but ongoing. And that is, number one, to be praying for these members of Congress. There's so many competing interests that come after them once they come to Washington, D.C. I've got some friends, new members that have come, and they're just overwhelmed with the people contacting them, the courting that takes place by some interest. And unless someone is really well grounded, they can easily be swept away. And so it's important we pray for them, that they stay focused, that the Lord provide for them, protect them, their families. It's a difficult environment, demanding as well, emotionally, physically, long days, a lot of pressing interest, got to move quickly, got to think quickly, make rapid decisions. So be praying for them. But then secondly is the accountability aspect. And I mean that in a positive sense of simply saying, hey, we want to help you do what you said you were going to do. So when we here at Washington Watch put out information asking you to make phone calls or send an email, sign a petition, very important that you join with us. As we saw in the most recent election, as a part of Washington Watch, we were one of the most influential voices in the Christian community by providing that information you to take action on. So let's keep that going and making sure that what we accomplished in November does not stop. Because, in fact, nothing was really accomplished other than we kept bad things from happening that we knew would happen if Hillary Clinton were elected. Now we have to make the good things happen. And a lot of that is being decided even now with personnel selections. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe will join us. We're going to be talking about John Kerry's rant on Israel, but also want to talk with him about the confirmation process. Scott Pruitt, Attorney General from Oklahoma, selected to be the Secretary of the Environmental Protection Agency. The left's already coming unglued over him. Scott's a great guy. We're going to talk about him and that confirmation process. But there are others, key agencies. I've expressed some concerns regarding the Secretary of State, the selection of Rex Tillerson, simply because of his role as the secretary or as the chairman of the Boy Scouts. He capitulated and basically opened the door to homosexuality in the Boy Scouts, and we've seen how that's had a negative impact upon the scouting, on scouting in the country. But this agenda has infiltrated the State Department in the last 8 years under Barack Obama to the detriment of religious freedom. And literally, Christians and other religious minorities around the world are suffering because this State Department has been focused on abortion politics and the advancement of sex-based politics, the homosexual agenda. It's a fact. It's a fact. In fact, if you get my daily update, you'll see again today a listing that the Obama administration is actually bragging about. They're bragging about what they've done. So it's there. Social policy is very much a part of what the State Department has been about in the last 8 years. That has to change, or religious freedom will continue to languish around the globe. All right, as I said, when we come back, Senator Jim Inhofe of the state of Oklahoma, Sooner State, joins us to talk about John Kerry's rant against Israel as well as confirmation politics coming into full view. Over 1,200 people will have to be confirmed by the Senate that the president taps. We're going to be talking about that, as well as we're going to be talking a little bit later with a former Deputy Secretary who was confirmed. We're going to talk about the process. What's it look like? What's it feel like? All that and more here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
It was a time when men rebuilt the ruins and held spears, shields, and bows. With one hand, they laid bricks. With the other, they held a weapon. Jerusalem had been destroyed by enemies that moved in after Judah was taken into captivity. Nehemiah said, "You see the distress we're in? Let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach." The people said, "Let us rise up and build," and set their hands to the good work. Our nation, after many years of decline, is in a state of moral destruction. The cry is going out, "Do you see the distress we're in? Rise up and build." To restore the moral foundations of America, an army of citizens must set their hands to a good work and be ready to fight. The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. AFA.net.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you've partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
Remember when you were a kid? You're playing outside, you skin your knee, you go running inside crying to your mommy. She'd brush off the dirt, kiss your boo-boo, and say, "There, there, honey, it's going to be all better." And the promise came true, didn't it? In no time, that sore knee was a memory, and you were back outside with your friends. Well, this is Johnny Erickson Tata agreeing with you that life is not that simple, is it? Nowhere in Scripture does it promise that God will kiss it and make it all better. Because sometimes circumstances do not change. But Romans 5 says that suffering produces perseverance. And perseverance, character. And character produces hope. Friend, your hope is going to be the happy outcome of it all. God may not kiss it and make it all go away, but He will bless it and make you strong, courageous, compassionate, and patient.
To Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this first live broadcast of 2017. A lot of activity here in our nation's capital. Glad to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Buckle up. A lot of ground to cover, not just today, but the next 6 months are going to be very, very busy. The House, by the way, on Thursday, will vote to condemn the UN Security Council's resolution denouncing the Israeli settlements. I was on Megyn Kelly Friday night talking about that on that show. It's crazy, and I won't have time, but I may talk about that a little bit later. The Republican leadership in the House said in a statement that the Obama administration made peace in the Middle East more difficult to achieve by not vetoing the UN measure, and I have to agree 100%. Well, here to give us a reaction to Secretary of State Kerry's speech is the senator, is one of the senators from Oklahoma, our good friend, one of the staunch conservatives in the Senate, longtime conservative leader, our good friend, Senator Jim Inhofe. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, I have to say, Tony, that I'm really honored to be on your first broadcast in 2017. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, sir. I hope you had a good Christmas.
Oh, I did. You know, we have 20 kids and grandkids, and we had half of them. That's pretty good.
Did you dress up like Santa?
Well, I confess, I did not.
Okay.
I finally learned. Yeah. Since all my grandkids are graduating from college, I guess I'll wait for the next crop to come along.
Yeah, we won't be long. They come around pretty quick.
You're right.
Well, I want to quickly get your response because I want to go on to Scott Pruitt, the Attorney General for Oklahoma, tapped for the EPA secretary. Great guy, but the left's kind of going ballistic on him. I want to talk about that in a moment. But first,
sure.
I want to get your reaction to Senator Kerry's rant against Israel.
Well, you know, that was just, I guess, day before Christmas, I think it was, that the resolution 2334, you know, it's just out condemning Israel, and I guess what we did is obscene. And
right.
To me, that's worse than just joining in. But Tony, you got to put this into perspective, because you and I were on the program 8 years ago talking about this very thing. You remember his first speech was in Cairo. And we're talking about the president.
Right.
He went in there, and at that time they had he had declared and coined the phrase "the new beginnings" for the Palestinians, and he talked about the Palestinians' plight was intolerable, and he just did the whole trip to the Middle East was nothing but was the first time that we have trashed Israel in the history of this country. And you know, you stop and you think about this. This is a fairly new. They got their independence in 1948, and they went through five wars. And I made a study of these five. It's been a while since I've given this talk, but we're talking about the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, and in all of these wars, they were the ones who were attacked. Now, as a result of that, some of the lines changed in terms, but then to come along and say, and as this president did, in the very first of his administration, we need to go back to the pre-1967 lines, and so it's just been a war on Israel. I have had the honor of spending a lot of time with Netanyahu, and you know, he shakes his head and just wonders what in the world is going on. Why? What did we go? Why did we lose our strongest supporter in the United States of America?
Yeah, in fact,
so it's been going on a long time now.
In 2013, when John Kerry was over there in Israel, going back and forth to Bethlehem, to Jerusalem, talking with Abbas, and then the prime minister. In fact, I was there with a few members from Congress, and we met with the prime minister right after John Kerry had left, and the frustration was visible because you're absolutely right. You've seen this administration from day one has distanced itself, or actually, I wouldn't say even be distanced themselves. They've been hostile toward Israel. And most Americans who have not had the benefit of being there do not realize how small of a country this is, and where you can be in Tel Aviv standing on top of one of the skyscrapers, and you can see into the West Bank. It's on a clear day. It's very difficult to protect this area if you're giving up space.
People don't understand that, and of course they're not getting this stuff. Now, talking about Kerry, what he did in the Iran deal was another attack or another trashing of Israel, and it's something that people are not aware of, mostly because the media has been very defensive to the president. And this thing on Kerry, you got to keep in mind, all during the time that Kerry and Obama were negotiating with Iran, it was the prime supporter, financial supporter of terrorism worldwide. I happened to be on the USS Carl Vincent back when they were right in the middle of the negotiations, as they're saying they're coming to a head, it's now successful, Iran is on our side, all of these things. That happened by coincidence to be when Iran had given a bunch of the equipment to be sent to Yemen from North Korea, and they were delivering the weapons down there to kill the good people at the same time that he was declaring a victory in the Iran negotiations. And again, it's just been, we've suffered through this thing for 8 years. I think one of the best speeches I've ever heard, and you probably would agree with this, Tony, was when Netanyahu came over here.
Yes.
I was sitting in the audience saying that was before the presidential election. I said, my choice to be president of the United States is Netanyahu.
Yeah, I was there. It was a remarkable speech, and it did show such a strong contrast between strong leadership and failed leadership. Which unfortunately what we've had. Hey, we're almost out of time, Senator, so I want to get your take. The president-elect Donald Trump selecting about 1,212 have to be confirmed by the Senate. That includes cabinet secretaries like Scott Pruitt. How does it look for Scott?
It's funny that you would ask me that question right now, because he's in my office now. In fact, he's just leaving. I'm helping him with his appointments to the various Democrat and Republican senators.
Tell him I said hello.
I will. Is he still out there? Yeah, okay. I will do that, Tony. First of all, I'm really the right person to ask about him, because back when he was first running for office in my state of Oklahoma, as you know, I've been in aviation for many, many years. I flew him around the state. To parts of the state where he wasn't, they didn't really know who he was.
Hey, Senator, we're up against. Can you hold on for 2 minutes so we can finish this? Yes. You got to go. Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. We're up against a break. We'll finish this on the other side of the break. Folks, don't go anywhere. Senator Jim Inhofe on the line. We're going to continue our conversation. Don't go away. We're right back after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Happy New Year as we head into a very enthusiastic markets and economy. Looks like we're going to get off to a very good start this week. We'll see how long it lasts. Will it hold? That is the big question. Is it going to hold? If it holds through the first quarter, it's in all likelihood going to hold possibly for the rest of the year. Some very interesting things going on. Of course, 20 days till we have a new president, but we certainly have already got a very new enthusiasm, not about the markets. Yes, the markets are looking very positive, but more importantly, it's about the economy. There is enthusiasm about the economy for the first time in 10 years, about where the economy is headed. Of course, the results of a good economy and a strong economy is a better growing, stronger market. Well, this week we're going to get construction spending numbers coming out here early in the week, and we're going to get the manufacturing number coming out, all expected to be up compared to last look. This is a manufacturing number for December and a construction number for November. We also, on Wednesday, get FOMC, the Fed minutes. That's just going to give us some indication about interest rates. ADP unemployment numbers, not a big deal, but we get a service sector number on Thursday. And of course, Friday, non-farm private payrolls expected to be around 170. We'll have to see if that happens. Last look, it was 156. We get factory orders, also an important number that's expected to be negative. But it looks like we're off to a good start. And all these numbers, they're the last of the Obama administration. Next set of numbers are going to be in the Trump administration.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this first live broadcast of 2017. A lot happening here in our nation's capital, and we're going to keep you informed on all of the activities. First 6 months going to be extremely critical of the new administration. As we were talking just moments ago, a number of appointments that will require Senate confirmation, over 1,212, I think, to be exact, require Senate confirmation. That's cabinet level all the way down to other positions. The secretary selected for, actually the nominee for the secretary of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, Oklahoma's attorney general, great guy. And talking to us about him is the senator from Oklahoma, Jim Inhofe. Jim, thanks for sticking around. Let's continue that conversation. You've got a long relationship with Scott Pruitt.
Yeah, I do, and you know, I chaired that committee for quite a number of years, the Environment Public Works Committee, and Scott Pruitt was always the guy you could go to. Right now, he actually has lawsuits from the state of Oklahoma against the EPA on a number of different issues, one being the power program of Obama and the other being WOTUS, that's the water program. So he's always been there and been willing to do the right thing. And he is one that they may zero in and try to target to keep from being confirmed. So as I said, he was just leaving my office when we first started this conversation. And he's doing the best he can to try to talk to these people. He's a great guy. He's one, I think I mentioned a minute ago, that I flew him around the state and got to, you know, worked with him a long time ago. So he's one that I believe that there are going to be a lot of Democrats, that at least four, that are really in trouble in 2018 that are going to have to at least look at him, because you know, they have to consider, they most likely will be considering their own careers first. So I believe we should get some votes for confirmation of Scott Pruitt to be director of the EPA.
Now, let me ask you this, Senator, from a standpoint of just logistically, as this will work out, these confirmations, that no one will be confirmed until after the president takes his post as president. Hearings will start. How many votes will they have in the Senate to receive confirmation?
Just a majority, 51. Of course, if all the Republicans stayed, then that would actually do it.
Do you think?
But in this case, I just know there are some on the Democrat side who are not going to be wanting to go back to their states, particularly states that are heavy coal states,
right?
And oppose this guy.
So, how do you think the Republicans will do? Will they stick together on Trump's nominees, or we may see some breaks there in Republican solidarity?
As it is right now, and I went out of my way just in the last 2 weeks. Calling a lot of the Republicans and Democrats, and I find that the most we could lose on the Democrat side would be 2, but I think I'm pretty sure that we pick up 4 from the on the Republicans, 4 more on the Democrat side. So I think we'll end up with having the necessary vote majority of the Senate for confirmation of Scott Pruitt.
Very good. Senator, thanks for being generous with your time. Great to talk with you again, and look forward to talking to you more as things unfold here in 2017.
That's right, and Happy New Year. It's going to be one.
Yes, absolutely. Senator Jim Inhofe of the Sooner State. I didn't talk to him about the football game over the weekend, but I'll let that pass. All right, talking about confirmations, joining me now to give kind of a firsthand view of the confirmation process. Tevi Troy, he was Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Tevi, thanks so much for joining us here on Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I was just talking with Jim Inhofe, Senator of Oklahoma, about the confirmation process with Scott Pruitt, a cabinet secretary member. Obviously, cabinet secretaries get a lot of scrutiny. What's this like from a standpoint? You were Deputy Secretary of the Health and Human Services. Tell our listeners a little bit about what this process entails. What's it like going through confirmation?
Well, first of all, I was extremely honored to have been selected by President George W. Bush and then confirmed unanimously by the Senate. So I was thrilled to get there, but the process is a difficult and arduous one. I remember one day I was sitting in my office going through all the papers that I had to fill out, and it was really quite an ordeal. And Secretary Leavitt, for whom I worked at HHS, came by and saw me, and he saw that I was somewhat flustered with all the paperwork, and he said, "You know, Tevi, it's difficult to go through it, but once you're through it, it's really a great honor and it's a great experience." So, so not easy to fill out all the paperwork, not easy to go through the hearings where the senators kind of berate you with a lot of tough questions, and they don't really want to hear your answers so much as make their statements. But again, it's a great honor to serve this great country.
How long did the process take for you from start to finish?
Right, so I've done some research on this, and I found that it typically takes 4 to 6 months in general, less time for cabinet secretaries at the beginning of an administration. But for me, I was selected in late April and then was confirmed in late July. So I had a relatively short time. So I was quite pleased it didn't go as long as I'd feared.
Mm-hmm. Tevi, I know you're short on time. We're up against a break. Can you hold on for just a couple of minutes, or you got to go?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. If you'll hold on for just a couple of minutes, I want to finish this conversation on the other side of this break, because I think people are going to be interested in what all is involved when you hear about confirmation and, what's it like sitting at the table? What kind of questions are asked? Those sort of things. So we're going to continue that conversation. Folks, don't go away. We're going to continue our conversation with Tevi Troy, former Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. A lot of folks are going to be at that table being grilled by the Senate in the next several months. We're going to talk about that. And later, get to your phone call. So don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. In just a moment, we're going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Talking today about the new Congress coming in, the 115th Congress, talking about John Kerry's rant on Israel and what Congress may do in response to that and why the State Department is so critical. Now we're talking confirmation politics. Tevi Troy, my guest, he was the former Deputy Secretary, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Tevi, thanks for sticking around. This process, while you were going through it, were you already on site awaiting confirmation? You were already working for the Department of Health and Human Services?
Actually, no, I was working at the White House at the time, but you have to be really careful about that. You cannot be doing work for the department to which you're going to be confirmed beforehand because the Senate gets very persnickety about that. They don't like if people are doing work that could be confirmed work before the confirmation blessing happens.
So these folks basically are in limbo for a period of time while they're going through this process.
Oh, absolutely. So Gene Scalia is a good friend of mine. It was the son of the late justice, and he was up for Solicitor of Labor, which is a very important job at the Labor Department, and they did not want to confirm him. The Democrats did not want to confirm him just because of his last name. There was nothing wrong with him, and they just had shared the last name as his father. And I remember he would sit around the department, and he wasn't allowed to do things. He gave up his law practice, and it was just very frustrating. He eventually was named acting solicitor, but he never made it through the confirmation process, and I think that's unfortunate.
Now, how long can someone be in an acting capacity?
There are very specific rules about it. I don't want to get it wrong, but I believe it's through two sessions of the Congress that go afterwards. But I mean, it's not a long time, and it's usually less than a year. Mm. So you can't linger on forever as an acting.
Now, you said you got through with unanimous approval, but obviously, as you've studied this and you've watched the process, there are some that get caught up in the kind of the political whirlwinds, and they try to make statements based upon an individual, regardless of the party they're in, generally the Republicans get beat up a little bit more from the Democratic senators. What do you anticipate in this incoming administration with the appointees of Donald Trump? Do we anticipate that the Democrats are going to make some real strong attempts to stop some of these nominees?
Oh, absolutely. I think they're going to be raving cane and making a whole lot of noise. However, they are going to have a challenge, and the challenge is threefold. First of all, usually a president gets his nominees upon entering office. There may be one scalp, but usually the president gets their nominees upon entering office. Number two is the president's party is the same party that is the majority in the Senate, so that makes it a lot easier to make the confirmations happen and to expedite the hearings. And third, it's thanks to Harry Reid, they gave up the filibuster in the Senate, so the Democrats really can't stop someone unless they bring Republican votes to oppose a presidential nominee, which I think is unlikely.
Where do we find the greatest opposition? Is it the high-profile positions, cabinet secretaries? Obviously, when we're talking about judicial, that's something different. But do we see the greatest level of opposition at the cabinet level? Or do we see some of these, deputy secretaries, assistants, do we see them being just as volatile in this process?
I would call it an exercise of opportunity. So it's not necessarily the level of the position so much as when the opposing party sees an opportunity to highlight a policy that they disagree with that they think is unpopular, or if there's a potential ethical violation. So when they see the chance, they really seize on it and they jump on it.
Mm. Well, it's going to be very fascinating to watch. Tevi, thanks so much for sharing your insight into the confirmation process.
Thanks. Always happy to do it.
All right. Tevi Troy, former Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, talking about the confirmation process. You're going to see a lot of that. I predict that you're going to see, especially, conservatives, outspoken conservatives who have made previous statements, spoken, held political office, they're going to attract the opposition of the Democrats. The question is going to be, as was pointed out, you only have to have a majority, and the Republicans have 52 seats in the Senate. Will they stick together? You've got some very squishy Republicans that may not be able to stomach it. So it's going to be fascinating to watch that process. 866-372-7234, the number to call to join the conversation here on this first live broadcast of 2017. I want to go back for a moment to the issue of Israel. I've been off for the last couple of weeks focusing primarily at home on the church and different things, so I haven't been on the air. Outrageous what John Kerry and the administration did. Now, John Kerry made his speech, it was an almost hour-long rant against Israel, in which he said basically one of the comments he made was Israel can be a Jewish state or a democracy, but not both. Now, has the president gone to any of these Muslim countries and challenged him with that? I mean, you talk about, man, that's just over the top. But look at what they did with this UN resolution 2334 and how they, they just basically stepped back from the Security Council resolution, which denounced these settlements in Israel. Now, let me. I spoke to this briefly on Fox News last Friday night. Look, people think of these settlements. They think like people are, setting up tents in the backyards of Palestinians. I mean, that is not at all what these are. I mean, I've been to places like Ariel, which is quote unquote a settlement. It is a thriving city. They have a university. Ariel University has 15,000 students. They have an industrial complex that employs Palestinians, Arabs, and Jews. I've walked through it. In fact, they have a toilet seat manufacturing plant there. They have a medical center that treats Palestinians and Arabs and Jews. They're actually living out the peace process. They have a performing arts theater there. They are working side by side, coexisting. But when you see stuff unilaterally like the UN did, it sets back the peace process. A lot of this has to be learned and practiced. And the one aspect about this that's overlooked is that these type what this resolution would essentially do is stigmatizes the products, activities in these quote-unquote settlements, these thriving communities. And it, in the end, it really hurts the Palestinians who actually have a good standard of living working in these facilities, in companies, businesses, manufacturing entities. But as I mentioned, I was over there twice. I've actually been over there when John Kerry was there, going back and forth, and I think on both occasions. One time it was by phone. We had were meeting with the prime minister. He got off the phone with John Kerry, visibly angered by that call, and then one time right after a meeting with John Kerry. And understandably so. And they've had to bite their tongue for the last 8 years. Well, finally, they don't have to anymore. And you can kind of see that coming out. You saw the Ambassador Dermer, the Israeli ambassador to the United States, really letting it fly last week in response to John Kerry, his comments. And anyway, my point, and I'm going to go to the phone lines here. My point is that one of the things they did is that they used the UN to push through this agenda that they could never get through Congress. That is why the State Department is so dangerous. And not just on Israel, but on so many things. This is what we see happening. That's why the State Department is so involved in social policy, you know, the promoting abortion overseas. They push this agenda and have it come back through the back door of the UN to be imposed on America. And so this is why the State Department is so, so dangerous. And you have to have someone at the helm that understands the Constitution and has backbone, quite frankly, who will stand up to the liberalism that has infiltrated. And it's not just with this administration. It's gotten worse. But the State Department has long been a hotbed of this liberalism. And of course, it's on steroids under this administration. I guess I'd say hotbed, maybe Miracle-Gro. I mean, they've been fertilized abundantly. All right, let's go to Tennessee where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. Just a question. Couldn't the president and John Kerry's actions be considered anti-Semitic? And if so, aren't there legal repercussions that they could face for that?
Well, to your first point, I would say when he made the statement that you can be a Jewish state or a democracy, but not both, that surely sounds anti-Semitic to me. Now, are there legal ramifications? No, I don't think so. Now, if you were conservative and you said something that they did not deem to be politically correct, then yes, they would take action against you somehow, some way. But look, this is a desperate administration. Barack Obama is a failed president, all right? And his foreign policy has failed miserably. And as I mentioned that night on Megyn Kelly's show, that this is really the icing on the cake, on their failed, half-baked cake of foreign policy. I mean, look, the Middle East is in turmoil. ISIS is a threat globally. Our one ally in that region is dangling by a thread. This is the result of their foreign policy, a disaster. Now, can it be repaired? Well, it can, but not easily. This stuff is not going to just fix itself. I mean, this is not self-repairing. This is going to take really some very intentional hard work. In fact, this whole thing with Israel itself is going to be a massive require a massive consumption of time of the incoming president to get this fixed. I mean, the UN's going to have to rescind this resolution. Congress is going to have to deal with it. And, you know, and of course, you have these issues with Rex Tillerson and his being cozy with Russia. You know, I'm not sure that Israel's real comfortable with Russia. You know, they shouldn't be. So there's a lot of issues here. I mean, there's just, again, it goes back to the total failure in the foreign policy of this administration. Of course, that's not just foreign policy, domestic policy the same way. But this president, I believe, now, all of the liberals are going to hail him as great and all this stuff, but history will record him as the worst president I think our country's ever had, without question, in my view. All right, John, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Texas where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Tony, I think Obama's antagonistic attitude toward Israel was displayed just blatantly when he bowed to the king of Saudi Arabia. It was at that, there were other times, but it was something that he started off slowly, and we began to see a greater antagonism toward Israel. And I firmly believe that it is because Barack Obama is a Muslim. You know, I can't prove that, but actions do speak louder than words.
Well, Carol, I don't think you would be alone in it. A lot of people have said the same thing. Now, whether or not he, you know, continues to be a Muslim, quote unquote, as, you know, he grew up in that environment. And, you know, he said he converted to being a Christian. But is he still sympathetic? I think his actions speak very clearly that he still remains very sympathetic to the Muslim faith. I mean, you see it throughout his administration, I mean, repeatedly, over and over. I mean, that's without question. The liberals can, you know, their heads can spin around and their eyes can roll back in their heads and they can say no. But, I mean, the reality is you look at the facts. Even when we were talking about these leaked emails that came back about how they were giving preferential treatment to Muslims. And, in fact, when they were dealing with individuals from the Middle East, they were segregating Christians for one pile, Muslims for another, for preferential treatment. So yes, the record is quite clear on that, Carol. Quite clear. Well, let me go back to the State Department and why this is so important. Because as this administration has used the State Department to push, whether it's an anti-Semitic agenda. It's certainly an agenda that's been hostile to Israel. But also, they have been pushing this pro-abortion, pro-LGBT. It's been to the detriment of religious freedom, which is a fundamental human right. The next administration, the incoming administration, has to fix that. Absolutely has to fix it. Monty, sorry I didn't get to your call. All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. Hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.